Hello and welcome to Landscape Photography World, the podcast for everyone passionate about landscape photography. I'm Grant Swinburne and I'll be your host on this show, talking to landscape photographers about their motivations, likes and dislikes. For Genevieve Ginty, the complex simplicity of colour and light has always captured her. It takes her breath away and propels her to create. Combining her love, study and practice of art, photography and design with 20 years of media production, management and education, for Genevieve this is the perfect marriage of form and function. Clear communication and individual expression to create beautiful photographs or designs and or a well-designed space in a website. Amongst decades of work and life experience, Genevieve studied at the National Art School in Sydney, the Australian Centre for Photography and the Graphic Design School. She started working with Photoshop in the 90s and taught her way through the Adobe suite ever since. Genevieve worked in film and television production for 20 years and spent almost half of that teaching the same at the Australian Film, Television and Radio School after. In this episode, Genevieve candidly shares her journey in the photographic field, from getting her first Polaroid camera as a child to building a career in landscape photography. She discusses how growing up in a creative family, her love for art and landscape have significantly influenced her work. Despite the challenges, Genevieve emphasizes how rewarding and important photography is to her, expressing that it not only serves as a form of communication, but also contributes to personal well-being. I hope you enjoy the show. G'day, Genevieve. Welcome to Landscape Photography World. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Grant. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Pleasure to have you on the show. It's been something that I've wanted to do for a little while. I've seen a bit of your work around and I'm very keen to explore with you a little bit about why you've chosen to work in the way that you have.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Why don't we start just with a quick 5 seconds on where it's all come from, where you got started and why you're a photographer.
Yeah, sure. So I did get my first camera when I was quite young. It was a Polaroid camera in the 80s. And I remember my absolute delight and excitement, but then that turned to quick disappointment when I ran out of photos really quickly and the 10 packs were too expensive. So I think I sped through like two or three packets and then that was it. And then I picked up the camera again when I was 15 to take photos of a very dear friend of mine. She wanted to do some modeling and she said, could you take some photos of me? I took my mum's Nikon. I actually used her. So mum had always taken photos and my sister had always, photography was a bit around, bit of knowledge. So I was given the bare basics of the three main areas you need to look out for to get a good exposure. Took some black and white film and went down to the local train tracks. Actually, just here, I'm pointing in this direction because I'm in my mum's backyard, and took some photos of her and just loved the whole experience. It was just fantastic. And so I didn't ever put the camera down after that point. Before then, I'd had like point and shoots, but I think I was just, because it was a point and shoot, I was just using it as a point and shoot. And I wasn't really thinking about the composition in the way that when you hold that beautiful weighty SLR camera in your hand, you suddenly, it has a different gravitas to it. So you suddenly respond to it in a different way.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I actually went on to win an award for that photo of her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, pretty crazy. But anyway, so that was good. That spurred me on a bit more.
So what's photography now to you and what does it mean to you?
It's so many things. For me, it's almost like a meditation, especially when I'm out in the environment, in the landscape and photographing the landscape. It's a very powerful kind of poignant moment where I feel like there's a correspondence between myself and the environment that I'm photographing. Or it's not always like that, but often when I go out by myself and I don't have a particular thing that I'm trying to achieve, I'm just there because I want to be there because it the atmosphere looks and feels pretty special.
Sure.
So I get drawn out there and then it's that as well as then wanting to share those moments with other people. And then at different times in my life, it's been different things. Like there was a period of time when I was a young teenager after I'd picked up that camera, wanting to be a photojournalist and wanting to go into war zones and save the world with my camera, or save the African wilderness with my camera. And yeah, it's all sorts of photography. What's it to
Cool.
you?
Oh, to me, it's really a way of life, as far as I'm concerned. It's something that it becomes a little bit all-consuming to my wife's regret sometimes, but it's definitely for me just a way of expressing myself in a way that I haven't really been able to do in any other way. I can write a little bit, and but most of that effort used to get put into corporate reports and whatever that I had to write, which, to be honest, weren't that inspiring. I tried to get creative a couple of times, but you could only go so far.
It's a bit like water though, isn't it? Like it has to find its own course. It has to, your creativity has to find a way so it'll go under the rocks if it needs to and flow.
Absolutely. And I think for me, if anyone bothers to look at my work, a lot of it is about water itself. And I
Same.
guess that relationship between water, and I was about to come back to yours, is I think part of life, but it's also necessary for all life. And my connection with the ocean, it just brings back some of the childhood memories of paddling around rock pools and the ocean pools around Sydney and so forth. And that's one of the reasons why I do it, is to bring back some of those feelings of just being a little bit freer of responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. That's fantastic.
So you mentioned water being a big part. Why is it such a big part for you, and what is it that draws you to it?
I guess that element started, in particular, started when we moved to the Hawkesbury River about 7 years ago, with my family. So we now live on Dangar Island in the Hawkesbury, which means that we have to cross water to go anywhere outside of our little suburb. And so that created a different relationship with water to anything that I'd had previously. And then also, it's provided me with the privilege of being able to see that environment in all its different, like across the seasons, across the day, in every different kind of phase that it can be. And it's constantly changing. It just changes from minute to minute. And there are some skies or atmospheres that I've seen around the river that I've never seen again. And you think to yourself, oh, that'll come. Especially when you're
It
like,
might be
oh,
20,
wow.
40 years before it does.
And you wait, oh, maybe it's an autumn thing. And then autumn rolls around and
Nothing
you know,
happens.
because, yeah, because Australia is in the constant El Nino cycle as well. And so we've got a lot of humidity in Sydney at the moment. But, and that in itself changes the nature of the river. But in actual fact, almost at the end of the drought period, in the last couple of years of the drought period before the rains came, was when there was more atmosphere in many ways. And I can't really explain that, but there's a, because I'm not a weather person, but there's just constant kind of atmospheric changes that are happening that affect everything, the water and the bush around it and the air around it. Yeah, it's incredible.
I think the Hawkesbury, being the kind of valley that it is, I have a sort of geography, geology, weathery background from elsewhere in my life, but a lot of that creates this microclimate. And even different stretches of the river have their own separate microclimates, because there's areas that in little bends and things that don't get a lot of sun. They might have half an hour's sun or an hour's sun, depending on the season, every day. And so within that little microclimate, the whole atmosphere changes. The flora and fauna is different to something that's only 20 yards down the river.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then on top of that, you've got the title changes as well,
Of course, yeah.
which make massive differences, and the currents that come and go with that. And the whole river is really quite extraordinary, and there's just always new things to see there. But it's also made me really intrigued with every other bit of water that I can find. Like I've just taken some photos recently of reflections of Melaleucas in like probably what would have been about an inch of water in a field, but just the way that the light and that like everything just worked. And so I'm fascinated with the way that water will reflect. It's not just about the reflections, but I guess it is. I don't know. I find it very hard to
That's okay.
use
I
what
do know
I'm.
what you're talking about because one of the things we talked about, the microclimates, the micro changes in where you position yourself. You walk 5 feet to the left or right of that exact spot, and you won't see the
You
same
won't see it.
reflection or see, yeah, you just won't see that image that you've got.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And often it's a moment in time. Like I drove past that copse of trees so many times, and then since then I've gone back, and the little pool of water isn't even there anymore. And like so much of it. And there was another series I did, this creek in the Hawkesbury, which was literally about 7 minutes of just the perfect conditions of sunlight coming through really dark storm clouds into a very narrow canyon of a creek after rain. So all the bush was lit up with all its splendiferous colors, and the light was just perfect. And so for a very short period of time, there was just this kaleidoscope of color on the surface of the water, and then it was gone. Like just so, yeah.
So one of the things I like to ask is whether or not you're a planner or you're more spontaneous out in the field. From the sounds of it to me, without you saying anything, you're on the more spontaneous end of the spectrum.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because it's a response for me. It's not necessarily about photographing a particular place or a particular type of scene. It's about responding to what the environment is doing, what the communication is between the different elements in the environment, and then what that's the little portmanteaus that that's creating, like the little windows.
One of the things I'd like to go back to is where it started to be art for you for photography, where it changed from documenting stuff, like you said, running around with your Polaroid to, okay, this is something that's a little bit more than that and has a little bit more meaning than just wandering around snapping shots randomly.
So I think that I definitely started out with that vision of, which is probably certainly last century what most people thought about when they picked up a camera, I guess, is it is essentially what you're doing is documenting. And I was definitely very influenced by National Geographic as a little kid, magazines, David Attenborough as a teenager. And then at the time that like at that time that I was at high school and studying photography, photo reportage was really having it was still in a it still is, but you know, everything was in print, it wasn't
Yeah, it
digital,
was
like
definitely a
so
high point for the photographic arts, I think.
without a doubt. And I think but I think I like what I remember feeling looking at those images was that there was a definite difference between the images that really made you feel something and the images that were just telling you something. And I was always only ever interested in creating photos that made you feel something. But at a young age, it's hard to really understand how to do that or how to harness it or even to recognize it if you're doing it. You almost don't really know enough about the world to be able to understand what you're capable of doing in that emotional space. But I did, I guess, in short answer to your question, after high school, I did do a short stint as a copy person waiting for a photo cadetship. So I was second in line for a photo cadetship. And then I realized that it was Murdoch, and so I realized I didn't really want to work. I
Wonder
had a
why.
I just had a political I was really torn between what I wanted or needed to do personally and what I wanted to stand for ethically. Or so anyway, I bailed out of there and I went to art school. So pretty early in the piece, it became about art.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned ethics, one of the things that I've noticed about your work is the emphasis that you put on the environment. Obviously, it's an important thing to you. And I think one of your recent images won the Hahnemüller Award for
Oh, yeah.
2023. And that was definitely about the environment. Talk to me a little bit about what it means to you and
Oh,
why
I
you
mean,
want to capture it in your photography.
I guess that goes back to that geo David Attenborough, so
Oh, okay.
influences that I was talking about before. I think that it's always been there. And I spent a good part of my youth on holiday camps in the Kangaroo Valley that was all about the bush and respecting the bush. And so it was really in my bio. I think my first line is I was brought up on art and the landscape. And that's true. It was almost like my mum was a very cultured, is a very cultured person. There was a lot of art in my life. Went to art galleries in a stroller. That's always been a language. And my father was always taking me to on bushwalks or to just beautiful places. And so that's always is it's always been a part of me. And yeah, at the moment it feels like it's the most important conversation we should be having. I know that there's a lot of really intense stuff happening in the world now, and there's a lot of people fighting for their lives in a physical sense and also in a psychological or emotional sense as well. There's a lot going on in the world, but realistically, none of it will mean anything if we aren't able to get a grip on protecting the world. And it's not about the image that you're talking about, the landscape in the jar. In many ways, what I'm saying is you can't just isolate the landscape and preserve it like it's not connected to anything, because it's connected to everything. And essentially, it's our oxygen. And so if we don't look after it, there's nothing that, fighting about this, that, or the other is completely inconsequential, because it won't even exist. So on one hand, it is about the beauty and the extraordinary nature of the environment. But on the other hand, it is also about our survival, because whatever happens, life has a way of continuing. And that's the thing that I witness all the time, which most landscape people who go out and spend time in the landscape, that the environment understand, is that it's just going on around us without us. Like, it doesn't care what we're doing,
No, that's right.
but we should care about what we're doing to it.
If we want to continue to exist as part of the ecosystem that we're a part of, this is the thing I think a lot of people forget, particularly when they live in urban environments largely, is that the human race, regardless of how good or bad it may well be, is part of the ecosystem. And you've got to understand that if your actions therefore are going to play a part in that ecosystem, and you're going to get back reactions based on some of what you do, and that individually as well as collectively and globally. It's,
Yeah, that's exactly right.
yeah.
I think there's a really big disconnect with, and I understand why and how that happens. And that's one of the reasons why I moved to Why we moved to the island, was because I was feeling disconnected and I didn't want my children to grow up without that.
Sure.
So I felt like I had to place them there to have the connection. What they do with that is totally up to them. But I do think that there is a big disconnect. It's like it's a conceptual idea, the environment now. Like it's so big in terms of the challenges that we're facing, that again, if you're not in it, or you're not seeing it, or you're not feeling it, it's very easy to put to the side and focus on what's right in front of you, which is putting food on the table for your family or dealing with the latest crisis.
You mentioned the language of art that you started to consume very early. How important is language in terms of your imagery in expressing the feelings that it expresses?
Do you mean languages in words, or do you
No,
mean
I mean
language
your visual
in?
language, because there's color, tone, contrast, the spectrum in light, there's a whole range of different things that you can actually bring to bear and change the feeling. You could be out on the brightest sunny day, but I can make that look like the gloomiest, darkest image you've ever seen if I want.
I guess that's true. I guess for me, it is really important, but obviously, I've responded to art over my life that has had an impact on me. And interestingly, most of the art that has influenced me has actually been painting, not
Okay,
photography.
yep.
And so I was really taken by the ability of an artist to be able to create a scene. Like, even if you talk about like colonial Australian painters, they create a scene, and it look and it's iconically Australian landscape, but
Yeah, it couldn't be anywhere else. Yeah.
totally, but it's also, so I loved that element that I could relate to it, because I guess at the time a lot of what was on television was coming from Britain or America, so it was something that was more familiar to me. And then also just their ability to, in like getting back to that emotional thing, to get that into the painting. And I just thought that was a really magical thing to be able to do. And so I guess in many ways, that's what I am now really focusing on with my photographs. But I'm still very much focused on the environment for the reasons that we talked about before. So, you know, I take photos of other things, but for me, I feel like that's the story I want to tell. That's what I want my work to be about, is here's our landscape, and here it is, maybe in a way that you don't necessarily get to see it, or that you haven't seen it. Or it's so easy to walk past something and just read it, like, that's a house on a street, there's a car in front, right? And what we do with creating art is to say, hang on, there's actually more going on there. There's more to that scene than just reading, I
Yeah.
guess. Did
And I
I
guess
even answer your question then? I can't.
absolutely. And wonderfully, I thought. I don't know what the listeners will think, but that's their problem.
Yeah, we're going pretty deep. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to though, because to me, this is the stuff that really makes photography interesting, and landscape photography in particular interesting to me, is that, like you said, yes, you can have your house on the street and there's the bin and there's the fence and the gate and the windows, etc., right? But if you change your focus or change your perspective of that, you can just put a slant of the eaves, for example, or a part of a window or a part of the gate, and you can actually make something that says, here's a house or here's a gate to a house, and here's what I'm saying about it is that it's, dilapidated, or it's really well kept, or it's really bright and cheerful, or whatever it is that you want to express. And to me, that's what I love about it. And I think
Totally. And it's all
your
about
answer
the
was
light.
perfect for that.
Oh, good. It's all about the light too. And
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I find, like, sometimes when I'm out on the river, I'm amused by the landscape, because I feel like there are these little collections of rocks right next to a tree in a way that's almost whimsical. And it's like,
Yeah.
what exactly are you doing there? Like, how did you end up there? Like, how is it that there's this sort of sandstone shelf, but there's a collection of four massive boulders, and you're all hanging out together, like you tried to get together or something. It's anamorphizing, but that's not really how I see it. I just think that it's taken a very long time for it to look like it looks,
Yeah.
and the scenes like that. And I just think there's life in there, it's just very slow.
How would you define success in your photography? And it could
Oh.
be commercial, it could be artistic. I don't care.
I think For me, it's definitely when people respond to the photo, to a photo, to a work. So when people look at it and go, or I actually had a girl cry, like a
Oh,
woman
wow.
just looking at a photo just made her. So that's amazing. Like, to me, that's kind of everything, because then I've communicated. What I was trying to say has been said, it's been received. People are getting into the photograph, and yeah, so that's it, definitely.
Cool. What do you see as being the most important place? Or, sorry, I'll start that again. What do you see as being landscape photography's place in society at the moment?
Yeah, what I'm really loving at the moment is that a lot of people are taking photographs in the landscape, of the landscape, and that has really opened up the type of photographs that we're seeing now of the landscape, which I think is great. And there's a lot of iconic photos or iconic places that you can go to take photos. I am really drawn to the very kind of normal, almost, like I was saying before, you just pass it by on another day, parts where there is something going on which is interesting or intriguing or whatever. I think that what's great about all of that is that people are spending time in the environment, in the landscape, taking photos, or it's turning up on their feed, or people are noticing it in a different way and responding to it in a different way. And some of the photos that I take, I'm just like, oh, I really love it if someone puts that in their lounge room or something, so they've got a piece of the environment or the landscape in their view all the time. Like, how fantastic is that? So I think that for everyone who's taking photos, whether you're taking your own photos and putting them on your own walls, or it doesn't really matter. I just think the awareness that's coming out of landscape photography is really great.
How do you challenge yourself to think outside the box and experiment with new ideas and approaches?
So probably by really trying to push into taking photographs in a way that are representational but not just representational. It's still that art thing, but I guess, like with the Melaleucas, those images I'm really in love with at the moment, because they're quite clearly trees, but they're not quite there. They're there. You don't know whether it's a shadow, a tree, a reflection. It's not very clear exactly how or what's going on there, but it's still definitely a tree. And I think that I'm quite interested in that. I don't spend a lot of time in post-production because I grew up in an analog. So the first, I want to say, maybe 15 years that I was taking photos was analog and or close to, and I spent a lot of time processing my own film and my own photos, and even using the colour darkroom at RIP, ACP. And so I really still approach photography with my digital camera in much the same way that I approached analog photography. So I don't want to take photos and then spend a heap of time in post-production changing it all. But that's not to say that I won't do that at some point down the track, because who knows? Who knows what's going to happen or what you get interested in? So it's tricky. You don't want to paint yourself into a corner of, oh, I don't do that or whatever. But just at the moment, that's my approach. And so, in terms of challenging myself, it's about, okay, how do I get a photograph that is not, that I guess pushes the or blurs that boundary and really moves into the art space. But I still really love taking photos that are more accessible than just art, with inverted commas for those listening, not watching. Yeah.
You use composition, lighting, and you mentioned minimal post-processing. I guess some of your images are quite impressionistic, and I think you've recently done a series, it might have been the Melaleuca one that I'm thinking of, where you've gone very impressionistic. How do you experiment in that space to start pushing the boundaries around what it is that you can see
Yeah.
versus what you want to convey as a feeling?
Yeah. There's a lot of lost photographs along the way to get there. there's a lot that come home that have nowhere to go. There's a lot of trial and error in that. But it really comes down to, it's all about the light. It's always all about the light, because when the light is sublime and just really, and you can, like, as you know, it's that subtle movement that you were talking about before, that in itself will change the light that in you, within your composition. And thanks for the compliment about the impressionism thing, because that's totally, like I said, I was so influenced by art as a younger person, and it's definitely there. And so I think I don't think I like my own work unless it's doing something like that for me. Yeah. So other people look at some photos that I take and go, oh wow, that's a great photo. I'm like, yeah, it's just it's a nice photo, sure. It's like technically fine, but like great. But it doesn't say anything to me. And then, but then stuff that I think says something to me doesn't necessarily say something to anyone else. Like, it's interpretation. Exactly. And
I know some of my favorite photos nobody else likes, but that's fine.
Yeah, totally.
they're for me, they're not for them, so you know.
Yeah, but I personally really love the way that light changes colors in the landscape. I really love that. So by the time it's 11 o'clock in the morning, it's all over for me, depending on what time of year it is. But yeah, you won't, anytime I take photos in the middle of the day, I never like them. Never, ever.
Yeah, I've just spent some time up in the Snowy Mountains in summer, and I thought I'd challenge myself rather than try and camp up there and do things to the extremes to get that lovely sunrise or sunset or whatever from the high plains there, and to shoot exclusively in harsh light in the middle of the day. And focusing largely on horizon. So it's a series that I haven't started in processing it, but in my head I'm already starting to bring it together. And it is deliberately about that harsh light.
The harshness, yeah.
Yeah, the contrast. And it was the feeling that I had walking around up there. So it was, you get up there and you see all these jagged rocks and the lack of trees and all of the heather that's living in these harsh conditions, and the rock was formed under the, you know, constant icing and de-icing and fracturing them and breaking them up. And so that was really what that sort of conceptually was for me, was to go, okay, let's do something different to what a lot of people would go up there to look at.
To do, yeah. I love that. I think that's great. And already I was getting an idea, like as soon as you first started talking about it, the horizon lines and the harsh light, and it's very, very Australian, like very, gives you that sense of how intense it can really be. That's what I was imagining. I don't know if that's what it looks like.
No, that sounds very similar to where I'm going. I've got a name for it, and I'm not going to tell anybody yet until I release it, but to be honest, I don't know if anyone else will like what I've done or what I'm planning to do with it, but so
doesn't
what?
Doesn't really matter, does it? Have you seen Murray Friedrich's incredible work?
I have, his work out on Lake Eyre and such. Yeah, it's just stunning, isn't it?
It's just amazing, absolutely. He talks about it, about the landscape being the medium rather than the photograph being the medium. And I just totally get it. I just fell into those photos. I was there for a long time.
In terms of where you live, how has that shaped not what you shoot, obviously, where you live, and if you shoot around, and as you said, you went to Dangar Island not specifically to take photos, but to get into that.
Maybe, subliminally. Who knows? It was pretty much the point that the career shifted, that's for sure. And COVID definitely pushed it over the edge, but I was already edging quite a lot towards. Sorry, I cut you short. You didn't even get to ask your question.
No, it's fine. That's okay.
Very. What I'm accused of this a lot around the dinner table.
No, it's fine. I'm the same. What I was going to ask was, how has where you live shaped how you shoot as opposed to what you shoot? because
obviously,
if you, as I was saying, if you're living in an environment that's enjoyable to shoot in, and you are shooting that, then that's what you shoot. But how you shoot that plays in back into some of that impressionistic stuff we were talking about before.
Yeah, I think what's really fantastic about where I live is that every morning that I wake up, like pre-dawn, I sit bolt right up in bed and I look out the window and check the conditions. And if the conditions are like something that I'm looking out for or a different, or, and I think about everything in terms of what the season is. So if it's a little bit foggy, how quickly is that going to burn off?
Yep.
Depending on the season, all that kind of stuff. So because now we've been there for 7 years, so I'm more methodical, I think. Not methodical, but I think more about, rather than just reacting to, oh, wow, oh, yeah, let's go out.
Yep.
I'm more, okay, is this going to provide me with something different? Do I have time to go further than I've been before, or do I just have time to go more local, and am I going to get anything? If that's the case, am I going to get something new, kind of thing? There are places on the river that I really want to go to, and my husband has started to come on the boat expeditions with me recently. That really started when, just over the summer holidays, when we went up the northern rivers, and we went up the river at pre-dawn. So that was very planned. It had to be, because we had to hire a boat. So I had to ring up the local boat hire and ask if he wouldn't mind getting out of bed at stupid hour to come and meet us. And he couldn't quite understand what was going on, because it's going to be dark. And I'm like, by the time we actually get somewhere, the light's creeping, because as the light's in all different directions, and on a river there's bends and twists and turns. So the light is different as you keep moving, and it keeps rising. So that was really great. So, yeah, what I was getting to is I'm becoming more specific about what I go for. But what is wonderful about where I live is that I can literally just go out for an hour and come back, and it's not even 9 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I can go out and be back by 8 if I have to. Usually though, you want to stay till 9, because it doesn't start to become too day.
Sun has to get up above the cliffs there. Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
What made you choose photography in the beginning, and how difficult was it for you to say, okay, well, this is the career that I want, particularly as you moved fairly early on into the art space as opposed to the photojournalistic space?
I think that the camera chose me. I really believe that. I had everyone in my family was is creative, and my sister was dancing. My other sister was at art college. They were a bit older than me. Mum is a historian, but she painted. She paints she painted amazing stuff, photography, singing. It was everywhere. And I was like, I've got to have something. What's it going to be? Not that. And then it'll come. And then, when I picked that first SLR up, I was like, it just felt so natural. I can't even explain. And composition, nobody ever, like in those early days, I didn't have any instruction on composition, and it just came naturally. But I do think that's all about spending all those hours in art galleries, and I was studying art at high school, 3 units with the HSC history, more so than practical, because I was just so interested and wanted to absorb and consume every bit of art across the cultures and whatever that I could. But I'm so sorry, Greg.
It's not a problem.
Yeah,
it was more around how you chose it as a career.
Yeah, and then so when after art school, I did take lots of photo, like I did a lot of band photography. Like most people in their 20s, I was working in hospitality, and I was actually working at the basement for a very long time. So I had access to a lot of live acts and musicians, and could basically photograph what I want. And that was really fantastic. And then there were a lot of people working there, a lot of friends who were in the business as well. So did a lot of stuff that way too. But it was really hard in the 90s to get work, to get published. There wasn't a lot. And then the lag between taking the photos. So unless you were employed in for a newspaper or a magazine specifically, the lag between taking the photos and then getting the time to develop and print the photographs yourself was often too big to then be able to get any meaning or traction. And then without the story, would it even get into any of the music rags that were around? Yeah. So there was a bit of that. And like musicians and artists don't have any money. So nobody had any real money to, it's not, you wouldn't really call it very commercial work. Like, I mean, it was commercial in the sense that you got paid, but certainly not enough to leave my night job.
Yeah.
And anyway, so then after doing that for a while, I was like, oh, actually, I think it was starting to wear my relationship with photography, and it was becoming a chore rather than a joy. And I was getting other corporate commercial work, but that wasn't why I got into taking, that's not why I wanted to be a photographer.
Yeah.
So I had to really think hard about that and just decided that maybe it would be quite nice to have a job where someone paid you for your skills and where you had hospitality was great. So I ended up working in TV for about 20 years.
Yep.
And there was crossover. So I was still doing photography leading into it and then coming out of it. And I really enjoyed that and it was great. And it was just the right period of my life to make money, start a family, get a mortgage, all of that kind of stuff. And to not be having the existential crisis of, oh, why doesn't anyone like my art?
I want to come back to that later too.
And because when your finances are dependent on it and it's so closely knitted to your core being of who you are, it can be a wonderful thing if it really works, but a very torturous thing if you're waking up every morning wondering whether you're going to make enough money to pay you to put food on the table. So I wasn't really interested in doing that in the early years. And then a whole heap of things ended up happening and then we ended up on Dangar Island. But even still now, it's not the only thing I do. I create websites for artists as well. And that's for artists and other interesting people. And I do commercial photography work as well for interiors. There's a real mix of stuff that's going on, but it's much better.
Let's talk about that. How do you structure it? Obviously, and most photographers I know can't survive just on their artistic landscape work. Selling prints is a rarity for most people, and it's really hard to get any traction anywhere else, etc. But I guess, how do you structure things so that there are multiple strings to your bow and that you're able to smooth out some of the lumps and bumps that happen in income and outgoings?
Yeah, it did. Like, I've still got two school-aged children, and at the point that the children came onto the scene, full-time work in TV alongside my husband's full-time project-based work was just too much for one household.
Sure.
For our household, rather, I shouldn't say that about but for our household, that was just too hard. No one was having a good time. I had the privilege of not having the pressure of having to be the primary income earner for that period of time, but still need to bring money in. So yeah, so now it's a balance of, like I say, the website and graphic design work, mostly website. And for me, that's just another art project. Like, it's another creative outlet for me. But it means that I'm at home in the studio. I'm not out in the field. And they're obviously longer pieces of work.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. And then it's also, I sometimes take photographs for people, or people license my photographs for their websites in that exchange as well, if that's what they need. I take photographs of people's artworks for their website. So there's other ways that I can bring the photography in there. And then, yeah, like I say, I've been doing interior commercial work as well. So it just all balances out. And So then there are periods of time where I don't get a lot of time to go and take photos out in the landscape. But that's okay as well, because there's often photos that I've taken at another time that really just didn't get any attention when I came back because I had to get into work or something happened. There's always something happened. I've got three parents who are at the end 20 point.
Yep.
So that's time consuming too.
Yeah, I can imagine. How do you balance everything, life and everything else, and then there's photography?
Yeah,
I get obviously something's got to get somewhere. Is it the photography or is it life?
I think that really changes on what my personal needs are or what the needs are of the people around me. With the three parents and the two children, any one of those can have a pretty big need at any one period of time, at any point. And really that's in many ways, like I think this is the career I always want to have, but because of those other things of wanting a mortgage and that kind of stuff, it's just started a little bit later. But it makes sense when you do have a family if you can have that flexibility to be able to walk out of your work situation and deal with a crisis for a few hours, or take a day out of your week to go and manage something that needs managing. So it's part necessity, it's like a clockwork. Like big cogs and little cogs, and they just keep turning around and things switch, but all of those cogs have to keep moving at one time. But what those cogs are labeled as can change.
How do you balance the need of clients? Obviously, going off and photographing someone's property or doing other commercial work, they're going to have their demands, and
that's right,
might not fit with your artistic integrity, creative vision, call it what you will. How do you deal with situations like that?
So I've been lucky in the sense that most people come to me knowing they come to me because they want what I am offering, because they like the style of photographs that I do of interiors, or because they want a website that doesn't look like anybody else's website.
Yeah. Right.
Because they want what I can give them. There have obviously been a couple of situations, as there is in any business, where I've gone partway down a path and I've known that you just have that feeling, right? You just know this probably isn't a great marriage, but we're going to do it because they're paying and they've said that they want me. So let's see. And it never goes the way that it was. And it's always been a mutual respect thing. Yep, this isn't really, you're not getting what you want. I can't give you what you want because my brain doesn't work that way. So if you want straight corporate, and I actually say it on my website, if you want straight corporate,
don't come here.
You need to go somewhere else. And I get asked to do events like photograph. I can't do that kind of stuff. I made the mistake recently of doing it again and regretted it. You forget the reason, or you know the reasons, and you think, oh, maybe it'll be different this time. And it's not. It's just not. Like it's. Yeah.
I don't mind doing event. It depends on the event. Corporate events, I actually don't mind because they can be quite interesting. But yeah, family events and weddings and that sort of thing, no thanks.
It's so much pressure. So much pressure, and
particularly if it's a friend or a friend of a friend that's recommended you. Oh, he's a photographer, he can do that, or she's a photographer, she can do that.
Yeah. And it's tricky as well when it's a friend or family situation, because then you're removed from it. You're not even allowed to have a good time.
Because
as soon as you take your eye off out of the viewfinder and go and have a chat with someone, you're off the job. So it's it's a bit of a fraught one, that one.
What's your most memorable photo experience?
Well, definitely that first one with my friend Phoebe, and another friend was with me, Daniel, who's also an amazing photographer. And he came to it a bit later. We did a little bit of a swap. He started in film and then just when I was moving into film and TV, he moved into photography.
Oh, okay.
You know, cool. One of those funny things. Anyway, so definitely that one. And then the one that I shot recently up at the Northern Rivers of a great egret on the river.
Mm.
That was really memorable because we were just going along and it was really pretty. It's mangrove and not many people really like mangrove. I find them quite majestic.
Yeah, in the right setting, they're quite a magnificent tree, I think. They're fascinating.
Yeah.
Right, they're their own ecosystem in some cases.
They really are, and we need them. They're so important. They're incredible filters. So anyway, yeah, we were just cruising along and this great egret was there. And my camera is a medium format camera. It's not a fast camera. So I, generally speaking, I don't really look out for wildlife, but I do love, if I can manage it, to take a photograph like that, because it's not just the animal, the bird or the animal. It's their environment. It's their space that they're in. So I find that more meaningful in a way than just than a tightly cropped image, which kind of separates them from their space. It was just a light moment, and I was shooting away. I because I saw it from a while away, I could set my camera up and get the right shutter speed and put it on drive and all of that kind of stuff, so that I was ready. But you still can't guarantee you're gonna get a good shot.
No, definitely.
And anyway, took a few photos and I think, I think I might have got it. And I look in the back of the back of the camera and
it's like, an adults only podcast.
Yeah. Right. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. Just the way the wings and the reflection in the water. And so that was memorable, just also because it was quite recent.
Yeah.
And because it was, I think, possibly not the first, but it was just a lovely moment of my husband and I being in the boat and just going up river so I can take photos, and he tries to stop and start the boat as best he can when I park through, which is funny, right? Because water moves, so you can't really stop a boat.
You can't just stop a boat. They keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's fun. Yeah.
What about horror stories? Have you had any situations where things got a bit sketchy?
Yeah, probably just come to me, actually. Horror story was shooting my sister's wedding.
Okay.
I was 19. I was really young. And shooting with, I had two camera bodies with two lenses. I was well set up, color, black and white.
Yep.
She had a medieval wedding and she'd pre-organized with a ACP magazine to have my photos published in the magazine.
Awesome. No pressure at all.
She's got a court jester. I'm photographing the court jester and the back of my camera just opened and the whole roll of film was exposed. So I'd obviously hadn't shot it properly. In my haste in changing that was a nightmare. That was terrible. It was so embarrassing because it was in front of the entire wedding party. But I've got my shit together, sure. Yeah.
At least compared to digital, it's only 36 shots that you missed.
That's true. I have lost, I did lose a hard drive. I had a shoulder operation and I made the error in the rehab phase. I'll just plug my hard drive in and look at some photos while I have to sit here in bed for however many weeks. Yeah. And it just dropped out and fell on the floor and never saw those photos again. I've got better systems now. I still think about there's two photos on that because I printed them. And I've got one print of each of those photos.
Nice.
Anyway.
I said I'd come back to it. Everyone has those moments where they're feeling imposter syndrome. They're not good enough or people don't like them. Or they're in that creative rut where it's just not happening and they don't want to get motivated to do it. How do you push through that and how do you manage that? Do you have any strategies that you use or is it you just go and do something different?
I think you just get better at it with time. But then maybe that's not the way. At the moment, I think there is so much else going on in my personal life that I don't have the bandwidth to fret over what I'm doing artistically or photographically.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways that's probably aiding me at the moment.
Yeah.
But I also don't, I think over the last few years I've learned to reduce my expectations of how other people respond to my work and just do what I need to do. Like I bought the medium format camera in 2017. So I've really only had it for 5-6 years, something like that. So it's only been in the last 5 or 6 years that I've come really back into it, and the momentum of that is growing year on year or month on month kind of thing. And I think over that time I'm getting a better understanding that it's a long game, and that there are photos that I know I've taken in the past that I can't do anything with yet, because it's a collection. Like I'm slowly gathering a collection of images, and there'll be some that I've taken in the past that I'm like, yeah, I understand why I did that, but I haven't done a good job of it. So now I want to go back there or find a similar kind of place or space to re-photograph that. Yeah, I think I just feel like it's slowly starting to make sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be today or next week or next year.
Yeah, no, that's excellent.
And it's also, getting back to that original comment about the meditation, it's also vital to my well-being. Like, and I've spoken about him quite a bit. So the support that you get from your partners is really important in any artistic endeavor. And he's really quite good at it, because there is so much going on in my personal life at the moment. He's quite good at saying, okay, so we're just going to go out in the boat tomorrow morning and bring your camera. Like, so he is now pushing me to get up, because he just knows that if I just do that and I have a little bit of a swim as well in the river, that everything's going to kind of come back to it. A better place, for everyone.
And that's always a good thing.
He's
learnt the essential lesson in life for all men.
That's exactly right. That's right. But I did say to him when we first got together, I said, you need to understand about me that I'm a creative person. And it's really important that I have time to myself and complete immersion in a creative practice or pursuit of some description, because otherwise I go a bit nutty and I'm no good. And I start to feel like a caged animal if I haven't been able to get creative. There's a lot of pent up energy.
What do you see as the future of photography and its biggest challenge that's facing it at the moment?
Yeah, but AI is definitely the thing that we all should be concerned about, not just in photography, but in, I don't mean it in that, oh, the sky is falling in kind of way.
Not in a terminal sort of world way.
Sorry? Yeah.
Not in a Terminator sort of world.
No. I don't mean it like that. I just think, and there's a part of me that, at the ripe old age of 50, goes, change happens. We went from gold into decimal currency.
All right.
Like decimalization. That are big, and the change is constant, and it has to be.
Yep.
And so part of me wants to see AI as just a part of that. And I'm not particularly concerned about AI in terms of photography, because I don't work, well, maybe I should be, but I don't work in portraiture, I don't work in reportage, I don't work in those highly commercialized spaces where I think it can be a massive threat. And I think for people who, like, I heard someone the other day say that because they sell clothing and they can just use AI to put different clothes on. And you go, well, that's doing a photographer out of a fashion job. But chances are, if that person is doing that, they wouldn't have had the finances to pay a photographer.
They're probably not paying a photographer now.
Anyway, that's exactly right. So I don't know that it necessarily has to mean that people's jobs are under threat. I think what is concerning about it is just things like the nature of copyright and how images created by other people can be used by AI to create different images. I think that's problematic, and I think that I've been going through Mum's incredibly extensive library recently, and yeah. and she's got a whole bunch of books like What Shell Is That and What Wildflower Is That. And I was saying to a friend, it's interesting because if you have to identify a shell or a wildflower, you'll just Google Glass, whatever the thing is on your phone, and it'll tell you straight away. Yeah. And that's great. You've got the information you were looking for. But what you've missed out on is looking at all the other shells leading into that, or wildflowers leading into finding the one that you wanted to identify, and anything else that you might learn along the way from a book. And so I think that regardless of what AI is doing, the way that society is going, people are doing that anyway.
Yeah.
People are just cutting out all the stuff, going straight to the information they want. And so there's no peripheral learning more. And now I'm completely off topic of AI, but I just think it's part of...
I get exactly where you're going on that. And I, in some way, agree. Yeah.
But I think people will always want to... Sorry, your original question was, what's the biggest challenge? Do you want to retake that?
Yeah, if you want. I don't mind.
The biggest challenge on photography? Because that's like totally off topic. What is the biggest challenge in photography? Oh, I'd still say it must be AI. I think I thought of a different answer to this question, Grant, previously.
Yeah. Go on.
When I was listening to your podcast, but I can't remember what it is. I might have written it down, but it's not in front of me. So I think that photography will always have a place. I don't think that photography really will ever be under threat, I guess, is probably my short answer. I think that it is such a strong medium for communication. I think that what will happen is we'll go through a phase where AI will definitely have an impact on that immediately, in the same way that it has with deep fakes and that kind of thing.
There's cameras already with algorithms that change the way that your image looks, depending on whether it's a phone camera or even some of the digital wonders coming out of Canon, Nikon and Olympus and friends.
Yeah, sure. And do you know what? Part of me kind of thinks that's okay too.
I'm totally on board with
it. Yeah, okay, good.
Helps me take better photos sometimes, because I'm sitting there trying to work out how to do it manually and it's just not working for me.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so I think, look, I know that I remember when I was at art college and people were talking about the advent of digital photography, and everyone was like, oh, no, it's the end of photography as we know it.
It's a total
disaster. This is going to be terrible, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, that actually sounds fantastic, because if I can take photos and I don't have to go and process them in my bathroom.
Not going to take me a week or two to get them in the first place.
Spend all my good coin on getting into a dark room and standing over those chemicals for 8 hours. That was just so many weekends I spent in a confined space with a lot of chemicals.
Yeah.
And it can't be good for you.
At least you're not having to deal with lead and mercury so much.
Right. I know, it's true. There are far worse ways to spend your time, without a doubt. But yeah, no.
But I know exactly what you mean. It was one of the reasons why I don't think I'll ever go back to film.
Yeah, yeah. I get that there's something really beautiful and tangible about it. And that will always be the case.
It's a magical experience.
Yeah, exactly. Very magical. But yeah, I at the moment I'm just loving the digital camera. And so I think I'm hoping that AI will be a little bit like that it'll pop out, and then it will all work out how to live with it and how to use it rather than be afraid of it.
Sure. No,
that's my hope.
Yeah, same here. What's the best piece or worst piece of advice anyone's ever given you?
We'll finish this conversation, and over the next 3 days I'll think, That's another one I should have. That's more profound. What's the best or worst advice anyone's ever given me in relation to photography? I think in the early days, I had a lot of men telling me what I should be doing, especially when I was taking photos in low light and stuff like that. And they're like, what are you doing? You're not using a flat. Now, it's not really advice. That's just annoying voices in your ear. Just leave me to do my thing. I think the best advice often actually comes from my friend, Daniel, when we're talking about photography and art. And he is the one who's always telling me, you've just got to do what's right for you. You've just got to do what's right. It doesn't matter. There are no rules. It doesn't matter.
I think that's fantastic advice, because I learned that strangely in the corporate world, writing contracts and things. Aside from, as long as you don't break the law, there technically are not many rules around what you can and can't put into a contract. And how you structure things. So the lack of rules that people impose on themselves, I think, is one of the biggest drawbacks that people have either in their creative life or even in their corporate life, is that they have to run on these rails, and that's how it works.
Yeah. When I originally started as a teenager, because you don't care what anyone says at that age.
Of course not. But nobody knows anything.
No one knows anything past my children. But certainly when I first started this time around, I think I felt, I was, because I was more mature and I felt like I had a lot of catching up to do, I was like, oh, what are the rules? How is everyone else doing this? Is that too grainy? Is my ISO too big? Like, I don't know. And now I'm just like, it's just what it, you make the choices you make for the reasons you make them. And it's so intuitive because it comes from all that time ago. It's only a problem if I don't like the outcome. It's not a problem for any other reason. Yeah.
Cool. Are there any photographers out there you think I should be talking to?
It's an interesting one, because I, like most of the photographers I follow, are artists who may sometimes take photos of the landscape, but who, there's one photographer that I met at the other art fair last year called Stu Murphy.
Yep.
Stuart Murphy, do you know him? He does some drone work. He does a lot of wetlands and stuff. And
I've seen a bit of his work about, yeah.
Yeah, he has a similar love for that whole wetland estuary. I'm really drawn to all of that in the Australian landscape. And it's good. Lots of people are seeing it in a different way now, which is great. But he does some great drone.
Fantastic.
Of that. Like, we've seen a lot of beautiful stuff around Lake Eyre and Salt Lakes and that kind of stuff. But I really like his work because it's a different kind of landscape.
Yeah.
So there's probably other photographers. There's an exhibition that I'm part of at the moment, and Janet Tavener she's an artist who has recently gone to Antarctica, and she's got some pretty incredible photos of ice walls. But she does a whole lot of different stuff as well that's not landscape. I don't know if she's, But it's a tricky, I don't know. I'm not very good at answering that question.
No worries, that's fine.
Sorry.
Well, unfortunately, we've got to start to wrap up now. I've got one last question for you, and it's one of the ones that my listeners really want to get to the bottom of. Do you like pineapple on pizza?
Do you know, I think it has its place sometimes. I don't always order it. I guess it's a little bit like, it's such an Aussie invention, isn't it? Pineapple on pizza.
I think so, yeah. Even though we call it the Hawaiian pizza, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's an Aussie invention as well.
I'm not sure how many.
Mind you, New Zealanders will probably claim it.
Oh, they might. It's true. Possible. When all of that started to happen, I started to think, maybe New Zealand is the seat of everything wonderful in the Antipodean.
but they didn't invent the Victor lawnmower.
No, that's true. But yes, pineapple on pizza. Look, I don't mind it. I don't necessarily choose to go there, but
fair enough.
Usually just eat it if it's there.
Yeah. I'm much the same. I don't care whether it's there or not. And if it's there, just adds that extra sweetness.
Sure. I guess the thing about the Hawaiian is, though, if you take the pineapple off, it's just a ham. It's just a ham pizza. It's a bit dull without the pineapple, let's face it. Yeah,
I agree. I'm more of a lot sort of person there.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right. It's been wonderful getting to know you, Genevieve. Where can people find your work?
Thanks, Grant. It's been really fun talking about all of this kind of stuff. So people can find my work on my website, which is GenevieveGinty.com, and also on through Instagram, which is a hilarious thing these days. It's really not doing what it said on the box anymore, is it?
They're just changing the shape of the box entirely.
Oh, it's just incredible. So, yeah, so in amongst your ads, you might be able to find one or two interesting images. So, yeah, that's Genevieve Ginty as well on Instagram and Facebook.
But, fantastic. Yeah,
my website's probably the best place.
Thanks very much.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Grant. It's been fun talking to you. See you.
Thanks again for listening to Landscape Photography World. I hope you enjoyed the show, and keep listening because I'll be joined by some great guests in upcoming episodes. You can find my work in this podcast at grantswinburnephotography.com. I'm also on Vero, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Grant Swinburne. Hope to see you out shooting soon.